This is Paul Puckett. Welcome to Getting There. I'm excited about today's show. We're going to be talking about money and happiness. Normally, my focus is on simply making you aware that money can have a negative impact on your life. It's one of the reasons why we spend most of our time talking about life on this show and not money. That said, today we're going to go a little beyond that with Laurie Peters from the Happiness Hangout, who'll be joining us around 2:20. We're going to talk about happiness, not just being aware that money can negatively impact you, but the ultimate goal, be happy. I want to thank some of my friends out on Facebook. I was looking for the best songs to play today. I say songs because I'm going to play two. I normally just do one. That illustrate the point I'm trying to make. They made some great suggestions. As a matter of fact, I may build a show around one of the songs that got suggested that I had not heard before. But ultimately, I decided to go with my original instincts for the last song, and I just happened to hit the wrong button this morning and stumbled across another song that I think might be perfect. So maybe all it is that we need to be happy is to get our boogie down.
You can be what you want to and all you
And that was Al Jarreau. Evidently, I can be what I want to be, and you can be what you want to be. All we got to do is get our boogie down. You know, I want to introduce new artists on the show. And so far, I've played Zach Brown. I did introduce you to Dennis Waterman last week from Britain that you probably have not heard. Al Jarreau, you have probably heard. So I'll tell you a couple things about Al, because I think Boogie Down is a song he wrote about himself. He became what he wanted to be. But, you know, his background is interesting. He and I have something in common. His father was a minister, as was mine. And Al Jarreau lettered in three sports in high school, baseball, basketball, and cross country. He got his start in singing as Teen Angel on Broadway for 3 months and decided he really liked music. He has a master's degree in vocal rehabilitation. He worked in a career, but he woke up one day and said, you know, I want to be a singer. And he's gotten 7 Grammys. He's had a very successful career. So I thought I'd like to open this show with the message, you can be whatever you want to be. You just got to get the stuff out of the way. And one of the things that can get in the way is money. So I want to talk to you a little bit about some of the people I've met in my career who, temporarily at least, had money become a problem. Let's talk a little bit about why that happens and some of the reasons it can happen. And to do that, I'm actually going to tell you about a couple of people that I've worked with over the years. And anytime you hear a story from me on this show, it is based on a real person that either I met with or worked with over the years. And every single time you hear that story, I won't be using their name. So, today we're going to talk a little bit about Sue. Sue was married to a guy named Tom, and they were both avid gardeners. And they had many other hobbies they loved to do. And so I rarely, if ever, did more than wave at him as I went in to see Sue. Now, Sue was the perfect image you might have in your mind of a grandmom. She was in her early 70s. And she always had every hair in place. Her glasses were crystal clean. She never wore extravagant clothing, despite their money. But she always wore clean, well-pressed clothing and looked very comfortable and happy with her life. We would generally get together quarterly for about an hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours. And here's what's interesting. We would review the portfolio and talk about its performance and what was going on in the market for no more than 10 minutes. And then she would generally reach out and, you know, say, thank you, I'll take a look at this later. And it would move somewhere where it probably wasn't going to get looked at later. And then she would say, I'm just curious, have you ever read? And she would bring up an author. And we'd talk about books. She would take me out in the yard and show me plants. She loved ferns. And she'd say, have you ever seen a fern like this? And I love plants and gardening, so it was great fun and have always been an avid reader. And so she reminded me of some authors I had read, but hadn't read in quite a while. And I dug those books out of my collection, and it was just such a great day when I had to go to see her for her quarterly investment review. Well, after about a year and a half of working with her, unfortunately, I got a phone call and her husband had passed. And she said, I'd like to get together and discuss the portfolio. When are you available? Well, generally, when someone passes away, a period of weeks maybe is appropriate before you get together, other than just to offer condolences, but she really wanted to meet. So I went out, scheduled an appointment for the next day, and went out and sat down with her. And it was a totally different person. Now, that's understandable, but let's go into that a little further. She had never had Wall Street Journals. She had never had Money Magazine. She had never had Investor's Business Daily. She'd never had a TV, although I think at the first meeting that didn't happen yet. But she had done research on the stocks that the bank was managing, something she had never done. Well, I didn't say anything about it. I answered her questions, and we actually had a really full-blown investment review, and she said, I'd like to do this again soon. So about a month later, she called and I went out and we reviewed the portfolio in great detail. Now, there was a marked change, same person, but you would have never known it was the same person. She was still wearing a nightgown from earlier that, I mean, I guess when she got out of bed. The glasses were sort of askew. Her hair was not in place. She looked exhausted. The TV that had never been downstairs, I don't even know if they had a TV. I'd never been upstairs. But the TV sitting there on some investment show, and the volume is fairly loud. There's piles of money-related news media like the Wall Street Journal, Investors Business Daily, Money Magazine, Bottom Line, scattered about. What had been a very neat, prim and proper woman who was keeping a very neat, prim and proper house had become disheveled, exhausted, unhappy, and very analytical about what was going on with her portfolio. Well, this is the third time we'd gotten together, and so obviously I had seen this change take place, and having known her, felt comfortable raising the issue of what's going on. Well, the TV was blaring so loud, I couldn't really concentrate and carry on the conversation. And I had mentioned to her, you may want to turn that down, but she hadn't done anything. The remote control was within reach. So I said, you know, Sue, I really need to talk to you. I hope you don't mind, but, and I hit the off button. You would have thought I'd clicked off life support. The look on her face. And she said, Paul, Exxon, they're about to report on Exxon and its earnings. I need to hear that. And so I, quite frankly, didn't give her the remote control, and I said, I need to know what's going on. I'll be happy to work with you however you want to do things, but there's been a real significant change. Paul, my husband passed away. I said, I know, and I'm terribly sorry that that happened. But can you tell me, do we know each other well enough for you to tell me what's going on? This is beyond, you know, grief. What happened? She took a deep breath and she looked at the floor for a second and she looked back up and she goes, Paul, I'm responsible for this. And I said, well, you've always been sort of responsible for this. I mean, you've hired the bank to handle it, but I'm not sure I understand. And she said, at the hospital, the last thing Tom said to me as he took my hand was, Sue, you're responsible for it all now. And a minute later, he slipped into unconsciousness, and about 4 hours later, he passed away. Paul, it was his dying wish. I have to make sure I fully understand this. And she was very, almost manic in this need to do that. And so I let her have her say, absolutely. And then she looked at me and she goes, now do you understand? And I said, I do understand. However, I want to ask you something, and it may make you very mad, and you may ask the bank to assign you a different trust officer or move banks, but I've known you too long and too well not to say something. My question is, if Tom were looking at the situation now, is this what he wanted? Because I suspect no one knows what their last words are going to be. I think he was trying to say to you that we'd done well, you and he had done well over the years, and that he wasn't going to be here anymore. But I think he'd want you to still be doing the things you want to do. That was the purpose of the money, was to take care of you and your husband, and then when something happened to you, the kids. And I know it's been tough, but, and as I was talking, she burst into tears and she said, well, of course Tom wouldn't want to see me this way. I know that. But I'm obligated, Paul. It's the last thing he said. And I said, are you obligated to a sentence or to almost 50 years you were married to a man who loved you deeply and cared about you and would not want to see you stressed out simply because of money? She was silent for a minute or two, and she said, I know you're right, but what do I do? And I said, well, if you don't mind, you make me a sandwich. And she looked up sort of like, what? And I said, while you're making a sandwich, I'm going to go out to the car. I'm going to ditch the suit. I've got a pair of shorts and a t-shirt in there and some tennis shoes. And we're going to clean up downstairs. We're going to get rid of all these periodicals and newspapers that are here and reports. And I'm going to help you take care of that. And I noticed the front beds and the yard. Well, I know I haven't had time to do any of that. I can't even look at it. I get so angry. You know, we used to keep it. I said, I know exactly how you kept it. And I happen to love gardening. So if you'll allow me, we'll do a little cleaning in here, grab a sandwich, and then you can get a chair and sit in the shade, and I'll take care of the front lawn. And I think I've got time to weed those beds before I go. Are you okay with that? And she smiled and she said, yeah, I think I am. I'm sorry. I said, you've got no reason to apologize. So, of course, we did. And after that, the next time I went out, what did we do? We talked about gardening. We talked about books. She was back to her old self. So what's the point of this story? Money can get in the way of happiness sometimes when you feel an obligation to someone else that involves the money itself. The pressure can be intense, particularly when a death is involved. Seem like it, but happiness is possible for all of us. One of the reasons I have this show, and one of the reasons I wrote the book, Investophobia, Overcome Your Deepest Investment Fears, is because I was surprised to discover that there are people who have money, significant amounts of money, and the money itself causes them problems. And that's why I'm very happy to have on the show today, Laurie Peters from the Happiness Hangout. We're going to talk not really so much about problems, but how you can avoid those problems, overcome those problems, and find happiness after the break. Hi, this is Paul Puckett. As you may know, I love coffee. My friends would tell you I don't love coffee. It's an obsession, and not just any coffee. Espresso. If you're in the Bradenton area, one of the jewels of Bradenton is Old Main Street, and you'll find a coffee shop, B-Town Coffee, with a great alley and awnings and fans to keep you cool in the summer and in the shade, free Wi-Fi, and quite frankly, the best hot dog in town. Stop by. You'll enjoy B-Town Coffee. Welcome back to Getting There. This is Paul Puckett. Happy to say that Laurie Peters from the Happiness Hangout has joined us. Laurie, how are you?
I'm great, Paul. How are you?
Doing great. I don't know if you had a chance to hear the beginning of the show. So when I say this, it may be confusing, but I've told my listeners all they need to do is get their boogie down. So you've been set up here to talk about happiness and getting our boogie down. I don't know how you feel about that.
Well, I love to get thrown a curveball. You know, I'm not a great dancer, you know, if we want to be literal about it. But yeah, I think I get my boogie down in feeling the best I can no matter what's happening. That's about all I can say.
Well, that's actually the answer I was looking for. And I'm a really good dancer as long as there's nobody either watching or within 10 feet. So, you know, I can cause damage. For our listeners that don't know your show, Happiness Hangout, tell me a little bit about yourself and your show.
Sure. The Happiness Hangout show has been on BBS Radio for about 6 months. And my show is on every other Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific time. And I bring on, typically I have a guest on almost all the time. I have a guest on and we talk about any issues that will help you feel your best. And that could be anything from inspiration, empowerment, major life changes and how to stay happy, how to stay happy through grieving, which sounds odd, and not necessarily stay happy, but how do you get through grieving in a way that will help you get through it easier, I guess I should say. And so we have many, many different kinds of topics on health, relationships, work, how to take a leap of faith when you need to. So, you know, because the word happiness is different for everybody, we do have a multitude of topics on it.
Well, you know, it's I was going to ask you what is happiness, but first, you had a background, if I recall, in academia and in counseling, maybe?
Yes.
Background did you have that sent you that direction?
Sure. It's a little strange. I guess everything works out for the best. My undergrad's in marketing. My bachelor's is in marketing. My master's is in counseling, and then I have another one in higher education. So I've spent I'm in my 25th year in higher education, worked in many facets of higher education, student services, and for the last 16 years, I had been working in workforce development. So I've been putting on programs for laid off workers, helping people in companies get upskilled in computer and business areas. And then I've been working with companies to get specific training for their employees in the business area and helped write grants, et cetera. And the day came where I knew I needed to make a change. I took a big, deep breath, knew I was going to lose, frankly, since we're talking about money, knew I was going to lose about 70% of my salary, took a deep breath and said, I have to follow my passion. And luckily, I was teaching one class at a time in counseling at the college. And they said, you know, we need you for a full load of classes, but we can't hire you full time. I said, fine by me. And I took a deep breath and I said, you know, we were making a restructure. I said, I don't want to be part of it. I have to go in this direction. And I did. So I'm a college instructor and I started my business in Happiness Hangout. But the odd thing was the degrees in business and in counseling, no matter what I was doing, both served me really well. As a matter of fact, my position for 16 years, I used what I learned in experience and in degrees for both degrees. So as odd as they sounded, they worked really well.
Well, it may sound odd to somebody. I must confess, even though I use my degrees, my background, you know, I've been in business in the financial services industry for 27 years, and my bachelor's is in voice performance opera, and my master's is in music ed, and singing my sales reports to my bosses when I was, you know, a loan officer didn't work very well. But you know, a lot of it is not about the specific training we have. It's how we apply what we learn. And it, you know, it sort of leads me to that question of we all have different backgrounds. You mentioned we all have a different definition of happiness. But if we look at it at the individual level, what is that generally when you have Happiness Hangout, what do you mean by happiness?
Sure. You know, quite frankly, for me, happiness equals fun. I have a family with a sense of humor that was born into me. And, you know, I started studying positive psychology many, many years ago. And it fits well with counseling because I am in the psych department, you know, along with the psych area. And so, you know, I began to have my own epiphanies and studying and learning and realizing, wow, what I do really fits with what I love. And I'm always wanting to have fun. Even when I'm working really hard, I want to be smiling and laughing as much as possible. And for me, it's fun. But for some people, you know, happiness might mean joy. It might mean contentment. It might mean adventure or excitement. It's one of those words that's really nebulous, and it just means something different to everybody. So when people will say, I just want to be happy. And when I talk with them, I have to find out what really that means to them, because it is very much an internal choice. And some of it is internally how you're built physiologically. It's a combination of both. And so I have to find out, you know, where people sit with all that and where they are with it.
You know, I think a lot of the most important words we use are difficult to define. You know, you were defining happiness and how it can mean different things to different people. You know, as we transition a little bit into talking about money and happiness, I don't know if you know my definition of wealth. You know, you go on to any TV show on money, a radio show on money, the media in print, and you see articles that say you need to have X dollars. $1 million, $1.5 million to retire. Mm-hmm. And that may be generally true. You need to have, you know, a specific number to call yourself wealthy. You need to be making at least $150,000 a year, $250,000 a year, pick a number. And they're trying to apply a term like happiness, because I see wealth, that term, the same way. Does wealth mean billionaire? Does wealth mean millionaire? Is it 10 million? What does it mean? And I define wealth as having more than you actually require, more than you need. So, you know, some of my happiest clients over the years have not been my biggest. Somebody that's got $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, they're in their late 60s, they're getting Social Security, and they either don't need or only need a small amount, 500 a month, maybe 800 a month, that portfolio is going to continue growing, even though it's supporting them. They've got their health. Most of the people I'm talking about have activities they love to do. So by any definition I see, those aren't wealthy people. Come on, Paul. They don't even have $1 million. So for purposes of what my message here on getting there is, and my show is much newer, but the message here is, you know, wealth is a different definition for everyone. And I think happiness is too. When it comes to wealth, whatever amount of money makes up wealth, have you seen, how does the money, either too much or too little, affected the people you know's happiness?
Well, it is a big, big topic. Because see, when you don't have enough, it can kind of take over your world, and it can actually make you feel like you are unhappy. And really what research says about it, there's specifically five things that positive psychology research says. And a couple of them are actually about money, because people tend to be very focused on it. And I always laugh, Paul. Like I always say, I don't really care if I have the money. If I don't have the expenses, then I'm fine. You know, like, what's the difference between giving me $200 and somebody paying my $200 bill off? You know, I mean, there's no
exactly.
difference there. It's
right.
There's no difference. So in terms of money, there, I've seen the numbers too, about, you know, the average US American has to make $75,000, $95,000, $105,000. It doesn't matter if you make $1 million and you're $1.5 million in debt. Like you said, it doesn't matter at all. So putting numbers out there, I struggle with that, first of all. The second thing I would say about money is money works really well if you have enough to do the things you want to do, enough of the things you want to do, pay your bills, and live comfortably. What research says is once you go over that by too much, it isn't that you don't want it anymore. It's that it doesn't make you actually any happier. And I'll prove that with the lottery, which is another one of the top big five around positive psychology and money, is that they've studied lottery winners. And what has come out is you're super happy at first. It's very short term. You're super happy. You're paying off bills. You're giving money to people. You're buying all these things you want. If you don't go bankrupt first, I mean, if you're smart about it, you do the things you want to do. And what happens is down the road, a year later, that becomes your new norm. So it doesn't excite you anymore. So if you have enough of it, adding more too much more to it isn't going to change your inner feeling of happiness, because happiness comes from inside you. And a lot of people still believe that happiness comes from external sources, like things, like money, like other people have to make you happy. And we all know we fall into that trap, Paul. I mean, if you know, someone makes you mad who is your partner in life, you get down, let's say. But someone who really is happy has an internal sense of happiness that doesn't really allow external things to mess with it too much. Sure, it will a little bit, but they really have that sense inside them that they don't. don't need to do that.
That would have to be somebody with an incredible level of balance, you know, to be able to handle. I see exactly what you're saying, you know, to be able to maintain happy during a crisis or when they did something dumb and forgot to show up or whatever it happens to be. Of course, I've never made any mistakes like that personally, but, you know, relating to what other people do.
Yeah.
That's right. And that sort of goes to for purposes of if you're not happy now, and of course, we want everybody to be happy. But if someone isn't happy now, what is it that they do to find that place where they can go, you know what? You know, maybe I didn't do what I thought I was going to do in life. Maybe I'm not where I thought I was going to be. Maybe things didn't work out the way I thought they would. But overall, I'm content. I'm happy. It's cool. How do you get somebody as a counselor to go from, you know, that non-happy place to whatever they define as happy?
Well, the first thing I want to say is you control about 40 to 50% of your happiness, or what you define as happiness, is actually controlled by your decision making. Okay. The other 50% or so is in your genes, how you're built. The good thing about it is no matter where you fall in terms of how you're built physiologically and how, where your happiness levels are, you know, how much endorphins go off in your brain and, you know, all the chemicals and all that different, you know, type of stuff, no matter where you are, 40 to 50% of it's under your control. That's the first piece of good news. Things that we talk about, you know, in counseling and what I talk about in general through my show and my speaking and my writing is, have you ever seen that show? And you and I talked about this before. I don't know if your listeners have ever seen this show, but it's called like Little Houses or something. And it's on like HGTV. And this one woman says, we're buying one of these little houses because we want to concentrate on the experiences of life, not the stuff. That's the key. Focusing on the experiences of life, meaning you have to have some kind of social network. That doesn't mean if you're an introvert, you want to be around 100 people all the time. It means your own social network, people you can call when you need to, people who are there physically within a mile of you when you need to be around somebody physically. So you've got to have some social network, whether you're in a group, whether you do one-on-ones with people, you've got to be out there in society. And when you are, you focus on the stuff. So for example, when you go out to dinner, there are people who say, oh, I want to go to so-and-so restaurant. It's $200 a plate and I blah, blah, blah. Well, if that's what you love and you're with the right people and you have the money without, you know, banging up a bunch of credit card debt and you can do it, great. But like for me, I sometimes, you know, I'll make a hot dog with my fiance and we're having a blast. It's not about what I'm eating typically, it's about who I'm with, the conversation I'm having, the fun we're having, the things, you know, we're talking about, what we're doing, you know, versus the amount of money we're spending. So if a person in their mindset says, what experiences do I want to have? That's what fulfills you, not how much money you're spending. There's much more, but if you want to comment to that, I mean, I'll stop for a second, but
well, no,
that's
I want
big
you to,
for people.
Yeah, I want you to continue, but I want to make sure I'm following completely. I think the overall message you had was it's not the Lamborghini, it's not the purchase of something that is material. It is the experience. So if you like being in a five-star restaurant and being very well dressed and you can afford it and you enjoy the food, it's not like you're sitting in that restaurant wishing you were wearing a sleeveless shirt and eating a hot dog, but you like it and you like being with your friends in that environment. That it's the experiences that are different for each one of us that we enjoy that lead to happiness.
Right. And I'll tell you an example. I have this little area. I gave it a name. I make a big deal out of everything that I think is fun. But it's a little like 12 by 12, 12 by 11 something area. It was a slab. It was a concrete slab. Well, I found this really cool flooring at all places, you know, one of those little discount stores. And it's almost like an outdoor flooring on it. And it looks so nice that I turned that little slab that sometimes even the weeds were growing up in the back of my condo to this place we call the bistro. Is it anything big? No. the association let us add another little fence to it for privacy. And I do everything. I have, you know, flowers and this great table and umbrella. And I have these things up on the fences that I love and beautiful plants and waterfall. Like, it's not a big space, but even my neighbors would be like, is the bistro open? And I'll say, yes, and we're having snacks and wine right now, you know, and it's like, it's funny because I even work not in my office, but downstairs so I can stare at it. It's just a little space. It doesn't. Sure. Would I like a bigger space? Sure. Will I get one someday? Yeah, I probably will. But I love this bistro and it's nothing. So it's all about really what you love, not about, oh, you know, I want to have this to show this off to somebody, or I want to have that. It's just what I love. Same thing with my car. I love my car, but what I have to do to keep loving my car is to remember how much I love it. You know, it's so sleek. I just love the car. So I make sure to wash it. I stand and look at it. When I walk towards it, I pay attention to it. When you get things, if you want to make them last longer in terms of your love for them, because again, your car becomes your new norm, your brand new house becomes your new norm, everything you do becomes your new norm, and you forget how much you loved it before. So you have to keep doing things to remind yourself, oh my gosh, I really do love this car. It's sleek and I'm washing it and I'm taking care of it, or whatever it is, to keep that in you. So you're not always running out going, I want the next best thing. I want the next best thing, because we forget, you know, how good we have it sometimes.
Well, and I totally get that. I'm trying not to chuckle on part of what you were saying, because you have a sleek car and you love that car and you keep it clean. And it even though maybe you've had it longer than 6 months, a year, you still love the car and you maintain it. And everyone who knows me is probably wishing I would answer my cell phone, because they're calling to say, does she know that you call your Armada the mobile man cave? You know, that you've added value to it, because occasionally you're contacted by archaeologists to find out exactly what it is that's back there. Okay, it's not that bad. But no, it's funny you say that. Now, you were, the part that's interesting, and I did, you know, we talked briefly, you know, in anticipation of you getting on the show, but, you know, the bistro, it's a cool name, first of all. It's a space you created. It's your space. Somehow you got a condo association to allow you to do this unique thing in your backyard. And it was funny. I was going to ask you, and I didn't have to. You said, sometimes I work downstairs, or I like to work downstairs, so that while I'm working, I can look out the window and I can see my little space out there. And I think you mentioned little houses earlier. The size, I think, does matter, but not in the same direction that people think. The size needs to be one where you're not burdened with the amount of time it takes to take care of the space. You know, if you had a half acre bistro back there, unless you have the money to afford the crew to take care of it, it might become a burden, but you have a manageable space. And so, yeah, okay, you can't fit 20 of your friends in there, but you can get a few in. What other types of experiences? Because everybody's different. What you know, I know, like, when I went through a rough time, I enjoyed getting on my bicycle and going outside and riding, not necessarily on the street, finding a state park, you know, and hopping on the bike, traveling. Is it really just whatever experience fits the person?
Yes. And sometimes people don't know what those are. So you have to kind of throw the fear away and get out and try new things you've always wanted to try. Obviously, in the health world, I mean, even if you can walk, you know, it lets endorphins off, releases endorphins in your brain. It releases those chemicals that give you that natural high. That's why working out, even walking, and, you know, I had a little knee issue that's going away for me right now. And I figured out, oh, I know what to do to make this go away now. But I love walking with my dog, and I stop and I actually pay attention to nature. Like when the flower, I live in a place where there's four seasons. Okay. So I notice the beauty about those four seasons. Is, I don't want to sound cheesy, but when I love my dog so much, and I just look at her and laugh because she's so darn cute, but I look around at trees, when, you know, grass is finally coming up and I can see concrete again and not snow. And I pay attention when the snow is beautiful and say, you know what, this is gorgeous. It's just a matter of paying attention and opening yourself up to things that you didn't before. For example, I taught a class called The Artist's Way to open up your creativity. Do the norm in a different way. Take a different way to work. Turn off the radio. Read a magazine, not in the car when you're driving, but read a magazine you would never read before. Do anything different. It releases that creativity, which creativity is also known to make you happy. So you really have to find those things, do more of them, find the people that like to do them. Because the issue is when you have people around you that, worst case, are bringing you down, but best case, just don't do the things you like to do, you know, that can be a really major issue. So I can tell you there's two specific things that anybody can do in terms of putting them into their experience. One would be gratitude. Gratitude and happiness go very well together. I have a friend who has a company and actually does what I do, but she drives in the gratitude lane. I drive in the happiness lane. So we separate those, but they do mesh very well together. One of the ways is that you can actually, it's better to actually keep a gratitude journal like every night or every morning or whenever you can. Write down, as small as it might be, anything you're grateful for that happened that day. And I have a ton of gratitude exercises. You can do them in a myriad of ways. For me, I hate to say it, but it's hard for me to write things down. I do them in the car. I do what I call a gratitude rant. And I do it in the car while I'm driving. Or if I'm feeling down, I immediately do a gratitude rant. And again, it is a part of your chemicals in your brain. It lifts you out of that funk. So let's say between a 1 and a 10, and 1 is at your worst. Some days, Paul, all you can do is get to a 4. And right. And you're okay. You smile a little bit. You take a deep breath. It's been a horrible, things have happened. It's okay. Throw in a gratitude rant. Write it down is better. But I have tons of exercises on unique ways to do them. That is one of the biggest, biggest ways that you can change your mindset. And you can do it in 3 minutes every day.
Well, first of all, I think that's a beautiful concept of doing a gratitude rant. Although I may be less than grateful for it, because there are people who ride with me when I drive, and I'm positive if I do one of my rants anytime soon, they'll smile and say, "Hey, Paul, let's make this one a gratitude rant."
It might be a little different. Yeah, we're supposed to say different things that we're grateful for, not screaming.
You said there were two. You do the gratitude journal, and we just got a few minutes, so give us that other one.
Sure, and I hate to call it a journal. Just throw it on a piece of paper. It'll do its job. The second thing is the happiest man in the world, and we don't have time to get into why, his name is Matthew Ricard, and he's a French-born biologist turned Tibetan monk. He's had many, many studies on his brain chemicals, everything. He is considered the happiest man in the world, Matthew Ricard. And he actually says, we are born to be altruistic. We are born to give to others. And that has been researched out. It's absolutely true. If you are feeling badly, just turn around and do something for someone. Again, it releases endorphins and dopamine. Your chemicals are released. You always feel better. It's across ages, cultures, it's worldwide. So when you're feeling bad, or just in general, it can be small. It doesn't mean back to money. It doesn't mean giving money to other people. If you do, that's even better, because people who give to charity also get that natural high. But if it's doing something for someone, smiling at someone, telling them they look nice when they do, I'm not saying to lie here, you know, doing whatever to make somebody feel better, in any way that you do it will naturally bring you up.
And I found that to be very true with people who are experiencing fears about their money. They're too focused on it. And one of the ways they can shake up that focus is to help somebody else, whether it's monetary or using, and I've emphasized every episode of the show and always will, when it comes to time and money, your time is worth a lot more. But there are ways that you can spend your time that created a more value than you're selling it for. And when you give to others, you know, mow the next door lady, the neighbor's lawn while they're in the hospital or whatever. When you do, it doesn't have to be a big charity thing either. But when you give to others, it's been my experience that a lot of people that have what everybody would call wealth and have an issue with that, suddenly they feel more comfortable with who they are. Suddenly they don't have the worries they had, and they become happy.
Mm-hmm. The word's about abundance, not just money. And so you can have abundance in a lot of ways. And when you have the abundance mindset, I'm sorry, money comes. It's just how it seems to work that I've seen for myself and others.
Well, as we close out, I know you've got an event coming up, and I also wanted to make sure that listeners had, you know, if they've been listening to you and you have so many things you can't cover, nobody can in 20 minutes, 30 minutes, where do they contact you and what do you have coming up?
Absolutely. Well, what I have coming up is I'm celebrating Happiness Hangout is just about to be trademarked officially, and I'm very excited to have that. And I'm celebrating my 1 year. I've been doing this work for a very long time. I've been publicly speaking for 20 some years, but doing this particular work, I'm coming up on a year celebration. So I'm having Celebrate Happiness Hangout. And it's, if you're in the Cleveland area or Northeast Ohio, it's going to be lots of free stuff. And it is Sunday, April 10th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Sidelines Pub in Brunswick, Ohio. Any of my information, for example, if someone's looking for a speaker for a wellness day or professional development day or for their group or corporate, whatever, all of my information, including tons of free resources on happiness, is at www.happinesshangout.net.
And since I mistyped it a few times, listeners, that's happinesshangout.net, not .com, .net, .net. Laurie, it has been great having you on the show. I wish you luck as you continue your own. And when does your show air for anybody who may want to take a listen to Happiness Hangout?
Sure. Happiness Hangout airs on BBS Radio every other Wednesday. So it is not tonight. It's next Wednesday and every other Wednesday from that point on at 5 p.m. Pacific. And then if you're in another time zone, just in the U.S., just go up from there.
That's I've been telling a lot of people. They're like, I thought you said 2. It says 11. And I'm like, BBSradio.com is located in California.
That's right.
So, yeah, which is cool. Well, listen, Laura, I really appreciate you being on the show. We're going to take a short break and come back, and I'll have one more song for you and a couple of closing comments.
Well, partner, we got our pork and beans, we got our coffee, and we got this real nice campfire. Now all we need is the radio. Go get that radio so we can listen to BBS.
Gosh darn, boss, we got this here radio, but we ain't got no batteries.
Well, I told you to buy some batteries yesterday, but you forgot to buy them today.
A man can only do so many things in one day. Go into town and get some for the both of us.
Go ahead, make my day.
Dagnabbit, you and your BBS radio.
Well, welcome back, everybody. I hope you enjoyed hearing Laurie Peters from the Happiness Hangout. Her contact information again is www.happinesshangout.net. You know, it's interesting that she brought up giving back is one of the methods of finding happiness. Next week's guest is from an organization you may have heard of if you're in Florida, is PACE Center for Girls. And their executive director, Amy Wick Mavis, will be joining me to talk about what PACE does for girls ages 11 to 18 in helping them achieve their academic goals, develop real-world skills, and prepare for the promise of their future. They've got some really fun events coming up. If you see a very large duck wandering around Manatee County, that's Quacky PACE, and there's a duck race coming up. And if you're not local and you're like, Paul, you know, I really thank you for telling me this, but it's not where I am. No, you can still buy tickets and win a Chevy Cruze. I'll double-check that. But you can get a Chevy Cruze lease for 2 years, which is awesome. Well, listen, I wanted to pick another song for you to hear, and I'm going to bring that on now and give you a couple closing comments afterwards. You know, one of the things happy people do or tend to do is they smile a lot. And, you know, we could get our boogie down and that may make us smile, but, you know, there's also a mellow way to get around to that.
Smile, though your heart is aching. Smile, even though it's breaking. When there are clouds in the sky, you'll get by if you smile. Through your fear and sorrow, smile, and maybe tomorrow you'll see the sun come shining through for you. Light up your face with gladness, hide every trace of sadness, although a tear may be ever so near. That's the time you must keep on trying. Smile, what's the use of crying? You'll find that life is still worthwhile if you just smile.
And that was Harry Connick Jr. Smile. I thought that'd be an appropriate way to close a show that opened with the upbeat Let's Get Our Boogie Down and finishes with a message that maybe, whatever we're going through, it's always nice to smile. Thank you for joining the conversation here on Getting There. We'll be on again next week at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on bbsradio.com. Have a great week.